This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to Space City, a NWA On Demand podcast. I'm Pete, and I'm with my friend Johnny. Johnny, how's it going, my friend?
It's going pretty good. Pretty good. We, again, going up through the week, I was like, not a lot of content been released this week. And then, kaboom, right in time for the weekend.
Yeah, boom, boom, boom. And they gave you a little bit of everything. It just comes from two different cards, one from 82 and one from 85. But you know what? You got a little smackering, a little bit of everything. You got some tag wrestling, some promos, some main event brawling, some girl action, and heck, we even get a squash and an effective squash at that. I'm all in. I like the variety. What about you?
Oh yeah, totally. A lot of fun and some super hot crowds.
Yeah. Oh god.
Especially in the later. One, the 85, you said?
Yeah, and that's, I was there live, so...
Yeah, you were there, I know, yeah. But boy, that crowd was off the chain crazy.
It really was. It was a super hot crowd, and then we were even supposed to get the Doug and Kamala 5 minutes with Akbar if Doug and wins, but Kamala hit skipped town, and all we got was... We just got the payoff, but I mean, the crowd was hot for that, man. And
right. We talked about that.
Super hot crowd, but yeah. Well, let's get going, man. And we're gonna open up with Lord Humongous versus Tony Falk, and this is from September 27th, 1985, and this is one of the ones I was there live at. I've always been like a Lord Humongous gimmick fan. I like the monster. I mean, it's definitely like a kind of like a Jason ripoff, who was pretty popular in this time. Probably from the mid-80s, and he was like the A-level villain for like monster movies and slasher films until like Freddy came along. But Jason, man, he did some serious bank at the movies, and they translated it to him drawing some decent money for a couple different territories, Mid-South being one of them, and Continental. And this is the version from Continental here for a call. He did maybe a 6 month, maybe a year run in Mid-South. And, I thought this gimmick worked here. I thought Falk is a seasoned pro who you kind of like in an underneath position on your card. But I still think Gary Hart or Skandar Akbar would be a better fit than Humperdinck with, Lord Humongous. Humperdinck just doesn't work for me with him. Where definitely Gary Hart or Skandar Akbar would definitely feels like it fit the motif better. But I thought this was a real short, effective squash, and it got Humongous over. And so essentially, what they needed to do, it worked. You know, they weren't out to supposed to have a classic match or go long. This was Falk making Humongous look good, and Humongous, I thought, looked like a monster, and so they can position him in up the card to make more money. What were you thinking here?
Well, I'm not taking away the iconic imagery of the hockey mask and Jason, but I always felt that Humongous was the whole thing was from the Road Warrior, that down to the name was Lord Humongous, and that's what he dressed exactly like, a big leather queen with a hockey mask.
You know, that could be it too. You know, I mean,
oh, it's I mean, it's literally the name of the character in the movie.
Then I will let that one. I guess I'll agree with you then.
Okay, but then you got me picturing, because I've seen, being how big Friday the 13th movies are, you fucking know it, man, because that was our generation and we went to all those fucking dumb movies. And can you imagine how even scary it would be if Jason was lumbering through the woods wearing that gear?
Ugh. Hell yeah.
And that's just it. I was like, between him and Demolition, what makes it seem so hard leather gay? And I'm like, it's not the tight, it's not the furry boots, it's the studs.
Yep.
The studs give it a little flair. And, you know,
very Queen, like, as in the rock group, you know?
Yeah, or the bar from the Police Academy movies, yes. The Blue Oyster Bar.
Yep. And I could not, you know, you give me $1,000, I could not have named that bar. That's awesome, Johnny. if your talent knows no, as it's limitless.
Fucking A, buddy. Fucking A. The Road Warrior and the Blue Oyster Bar.
Do you walk into a trivia night at like bars and people are like, oh, fuck, it's 80s trivia night. We're literally fucked. Fucking Sorrows here. That fucking piece of crap.
Well, that was it. When I used to be in a trivia league back in the day, back in Jersey, my area was TV and movies and shit. If I could get those categories, man, no one was fucking beating me.
I believe it.
Yeah, but geography comes up, and I'm just the biggest dummy in the world, so there you go. But anyway, Tony Falk, who we do know goes on to have a pretty good career, he's Boy Tony, right?
Yep, from Memphis, yep.
Love Boy Tony. And he's bumping around great here, but boy, he looks like such a total zero.
Yeah.
Just a bad blonde mustache with the bad blonde haircut, and just he just looked like a jobber, which of course that's the point. You know, it's great. He's like, I need a new look. Boy George, that'll do it. And it did.
Yeah, I think Boy Tony was his only real push ever. He was always like the under guy. I mean, hell, later on he became the ref for World Class and eventually USWA. When he was Eric Embry's lieutenant and they were like second in command when it came to booking. But he was the ref, yeah.
He got over that Boy Tony gimmick in both Tennessee and Texas, right?
Yeah.
So, hey, there you go, something.
Yeah, I just remember the Boy Tony because Tracy Smothers was having to do jobs for him and stuff when he was first breaking into Memphis in, like, I think it was 82 even. I think it was before here, Tony Falk. I'm pretty sure Boy Tony was like 83, 84 because I think it was like right when Tracy Smothers was breaking in type of stuff.
He gets down to Watts. He ain't having none of that shit.
Yeah, no, Watts wasn't having any. And really, that's a gimmick. That was just a straight Memphis gimmick. And it was an underneath gimmick. It still wasn't a main event gimmick or by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, trust me, it wasn't because of Paul. It wasn't because of Bill Watts's, I find this gimmick offensive to the homosexual community, and I won't have it in my territory.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Oh, man. But yeah, I'm a big mark for the Lord Humongous gimmick. Other than that,
That's the one thing though. I can imagine you're a kid in that crowd seeing that motherfucker walk into the ring. He's a goddamn giant.
Yeah.
That's insane. I mean, just kind of to a kid, I'm sure it was scary as fuck.
Oh, it was. You're like, oh fuck. But what about? What do you think? Do you think like a Gary Hart or Skander Akbar would fit better with him than what's his name? Humperdinck.
No, because I just picture that Humperdinck is an old retired gay guy from Florida, and they met in a bar down in South Beach. And
I'm no selling that completely.
Come on. And now they're going on a path of destruction.
Oh, Jesus. All right, man. Let's move to the next match, which is Misty Blue versus Linda Dallas.
Hey, Misty Blue. She needed the money. Oh, hey.
What'd you make of this, man?
It was pretty good. I know I must have seen Linda Dallas over the course of my fandom because the name rings a bell.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't call her, and she's working like a punk rock gimmick, and she's short, man. She's like, but she's playing the little diminutive fucking rabble-rousing, you know. She was awesome. I really liked her. Misty Blue was okay. We made a fun match. They even put in the midget stuff with the ref.
Yeah.
Like they all fall on the ref, which is all this pervy ref. He's just getting himself in there to get some free rubs. And then they kick him in the ass and he's running around grabbing his ass. I'm like, you know, you don't need to. Why do you got to make it this at all about this guy? Because these two chicks are having a pretty fucking good match. But besides that, they did a great bit where Linda is biting Misty. And the referee breaks it up, and he's like, "You don't bite her." And she goes, "She bit my ass." And he's like, and he's confused by this. I thought that was kind of funny, but they were working their, no pun intended, they were working their asses off. And I thought this was a lot of fun. And apparently it was chilly in the Coliseum that evening, based on Misty Blue. And I'll just leave it at that, because I got to show some class.
Yeah, well, appreciate that, John. You know, Missy Blue, actually, she was even working all the way up to, like, 94.
Really?
In tags with, they were doing mixed tags with the Rock and Roll Express and Misty Blue versus Candido, Brian Lee, and Sonny.
That's right. I've seen that.
Yeah, so they did that around the horn. I think Lee and Candido did, a year program with the Rock and Roll. So, I mean, they probably did 3 months worth of six-mans with the girls and stuff involved. And so, obviously, she's somebody who could work if you're going to be working in the main event program. And so, obviously, in Cornette, you know, not from Houston, but did some time in Houston. And probably, you know, probably he knew her as a pretty good worker. And here, I mean, it was a pretty good match. I mean, Dallas is out to the leg early, and then you see Blue with this big kickoff. Dallas back to the leg. Again, a defiant kickoff. Big drop kick by Blue. And I liked how Dallas bites her. Blue with back-to-back butt drops. A hair rip by Dallas gets the ref involved, which we were talking about. Yeah, you know, overall fun little match. Maybe like a 2.25 star match. Nothing blow away, but it was definitely something that kept your interest and entertained you enough for what they were doing there. I really had no complaints with the match and stuff. It's amazing that Missy Blue was working in a main event program right. 9 years later from there.
And again, like we say when we talk about these chicks, as we said on this show, chicks, I'm the worst. These ladies. This what we watched on our last Titans. These chicks were, and this is a total compliment, tough broads.
Yeah.
Again, these are just tough broads. You know, this wasn't a lot of hair pulling and rolling over. They were slamming each other around really good.
And it wasn't as politically correct back then either. So it was one hard to work to get the crowd, and they did here. And I bet you there wasn't a lot of guys who were happy to have girls on the card because, you know, they didn't feel they deserved the same payoff or deserved a payoff like they did or what have you. Or they're taking up time on the card that could have gone to me or gone to one of their friends or what have you.
Or they're a little brighter, you know, that Paul Bosch knows that, you know, you got to book a carnival.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's Paul Bosch. That's why he was so successful for all those years. And then we move over to Jake Roberts versus The Barbarian. And I'm a big Jake fan. I'm not a big Barbarian. This is the Nord to The Barbarian who went on to become the Berserker. I just wasn't doing anything for me. We're already right off the bat, Barbarian's doing King of the Mountain spots, and this is a battle of former partners. They were once a heel team, and they were actually a good tag team because Jake was a genius and was able to build all these great matches around, you know, and he just was able to highlight Barbarian in the best way possible. And
their feuds were with DiBiase and Williams.
Williams, they wrestled the Rock and Roll.
And the
Express.
Rock and Rolls.
Yeah, so they were working good people, too. Yeah, so it wasn't like they had to carry slouches. So, I mean, when you have three out of the four are really good workers or top-of-the-line workers, you can all make the Barbarian look good. And Jake's after the leg, and we get some brawling outside, and the Barbarian's getting good heat. Crowd is rallying behind Jake, and Barbarian working a bear hug. Big knee lift from Jake gives him some separation. And at that point, the crowd is 100% behind and ready for a Jake comeback. And Jake gets a quick one, but then hits the DDT and Humongous attacks because they're in a big feud, and Jake is busted open. And then all three put the beat down on Jake. And I like the ending because I mean, the whole purpose of this was, you know, obviously to get Barbarian and Jake going on their separate ways and to add heat to the Humongous feud because that's where the money is. And Jake is with Jake and Humongous, not Barbarian. But having these two big, giant guys just annihilate Jake has added heat and gave and Jake is really good as like an underneath babyface. People don't give him enough credit for his selling, and I thought he did a good job here for getting sympathy. What were your thoughts here?
I adored this. first of all, Jake, when he comes down to the ring, he gets announced, the announcer. I love this announcer. He goes, our next match, which is obviously a grudge match. It's obviously a grudge match. Obviously. He probably was like, why do I have to announce it as a grudge match? Everyone knows that. Just say it. Okay, obviously. Jake comes out in his mid-80s rock and roll half t-shirt with some tears in it.
Yep.
I remember that look. And again, this was the fucking, you know, the barbarian here. I was making a point in my head while I was watching this. I was like, there were so many guys in so many territories who were brought in for their 80s giant steroid muscle look. And Nord the Barbarian was definitely one of them. But I thought he was always okay.
I thought he developed into a pretty decent worker.
A pretty decent guy. So, yeah. And here, I'm seeing potential, but it's definitely Jake.
Yeah.
Just doing everything.
Oh, yeah,
here.
He's green as fuck here. But once he, I felt like once he actually got into the WWF as the Berserker, I actually thought he was a pretty athletic big man who actually had, I remember watching a house show with him and Bret Hart, and I felt that the Berserker outworked Bret Hart on a house show in Madison Square Garden. And people want to make that statement, people are like, you are fucking full of shit.
Yeah,
but
it was
honestly,
a house show.
It was a house show, and Bret was more than happy to be a lazy ass on house shows. And I know the Canadians hate to admit it, but it's true. Watch the footage. But I thought he had turned into a pretty damn a good worker, and he could actually, if he had a good gimmick, he could have gotten a good push in the WWF at the time.
But at the beginning, there's one King of the Mountain spot, and then he doesn't do it again, and Jake grabs him by the leg, pulls him out, and then it's just ass-kicking time. And Jake just kicks his ass for a good, like, 4 minutes. It's awesome. The crowd's going nuts. He does one move, and this shows some of either the athleticism of the Barbarian, or he put ice on this afterwards. But Jake pops him, and he drops into a split. Like, not a full split, but one leg full split with the other leg bent. Like, he bounced down into it like a hip-hop dancer. I was like, oh, God, that looked painful. He's a limber fella.
Yep.
And at the end, you know, they're running in, they're beating the fuck out of him. This is when I'm loving everything about this, because that place sounded like, and please let me know what it sounded like being there, they sounded like they wanted to fucking riot.
Oh, yeah, they were. Yeah. This was a hot crowd, man. I mean, this was a freaking white hot crowd, and they loved their baby faces and wanted the heels to get their pay up and come
it,
up
it
and
was,
stuff.
The reaction was, you'd hear that kind of reaction, and I was waiting for the shot of them trying to lead the heels back to the locker room, just being pelted with shit, and it seemed like it wasn't that bad. You know, because Paul Bosch keeps his crowds under control with his announcer, who then ends this match footage with, he was like, do not throw anything in the Houston Coliseum. You will be arrested. And he's not trying to, I've never mentioned this before, he's never just trying to be nice about it, which is great. He's not like, please. No, now. It's like, you will be arrested. Knock it off, dum-dums. And I love that guy.
Yeah.
But that's how it led to the chaos. Hearing him announce that like that, amongst the chaos, it's almost like Paul Bosch says, I want you to yell it this way, so it sounds even fucking nuts.
Yeah, he's like yelling fire
it's great. I can't imagine being in that fucking crowd. How old were you at the time, like 14?
I was probably, let me see here, 72. I was, 12, turning 13 the following month. I was here for my birthday.
That must have felt like you were at a fucking rock concert, man.
Yeah, but I was here with my father and my brother. One of my few shows my father went to, and he allowed me to go because it was my birthday. I wanted to see Hacksaw send Kamala out, but we didn't get that match, but we still got the payoff, so I was happy as a clam, and me and my brother wanted to see Hacksaw get that no-good Skandar Akbar.
Did he announce your name?
No, we didn't do that, and I think my dad would be mortified if our name was announced on wrestling.
Honey, I just think I heard the Schumachers mentioned on television.
Yeah, no, we didn't get the cake and ice cream before the No. But yeah. Oh man. It was good times. And
I was just thinking back to some of the times where my dad took me to fucking wrestling, and he wasn't the biggest fan either. But he took me in some of just the great times I had. So, you know, not to get all sentimental, everybody, but that's awesome.
Yeah,
you know,
my dad had no problems dropping me and my brother off at the Coliseum or later on in the Summit when I went to watch WWF stuff. The only times he ever went, it might have been two or three times, and it was going with me for my birthday type of thing and stuff.
My dad and his best friend took me for a day in Philly and a night at the matches after my first serious girlfriend dumped me.
Oh.
And it was the worst, but it was the greatest. It was one of the best days of my life. So this is great. But just like you, as soon as you're old enough for him to just drop you off, that's what my dad did too. He'd be like dropping three 16-year-olds off in a shitty part of Philadelphia while he went to dinner with his girlfriend.
Yep. I was like, he let us go when I was 13 in 85, and that's pretty young. And it was a big, I don't know, but we were able to
It must have been a safer part of town than the part of town the Philly Civic Center was in.
Yeah, Houston was more homely than Philly. You know, they didn't have the reputation of gangsters like Philly has and stuff. And violence.
It was a sketchy part of the city. I'll just leave it at that.
There we go. But hey, let's move to the next match, which I fucking loved, and it was the Fantastics versus Dutch Mantel and Bill Dundee. Whip on Mantel's whip is on the pole, so it's a pole match with the bull rope on top. And I was there. I was here. I was live here, and the Fantastics were just like super over in H-Town. Oh yeah, I mean look at this. And when they're doing their opening, you see a glimpse of me towards the end when they're getting all the love from the ladies. Like there's a group of guys.
Did you get a kiss?
No, I wasn't going for the kiss. I was going for the high five. So you see a little of my feathered hair, dude, with the little part down the middle. Total 80s style haircut. That's
awesome. No, because there was one little kid during their super long, where they got a hug and kiss and high five every single fan.
And 99.9% of those girls were ugly.
but it was, I can't remember if it was Tommy Rogers or Bobby, but it's almost like they went in for one, and I think he thought it was an ugly redheaded chick, and he pulls back real quick, and you quickly see, no, it's an ugly redheaded boy. And he's got a giant grin on his face because he just almost got a peck from Tommy Rogers. And he reminded me of the gay kid from Fame. He was like, ooh. And Tommy Rogers just burst back. You take your risks when you decide you're going to kiss and high-five the entire audience.
That's funny. But yeah, but they were getting mawed by every ugly girl and their mother here. And there's me trying to get a high five along with there's a couple other guys trying to. Dundee is known as like one of the great pole workers of all time because of his circus background, and the crowd goes nuts every time the Fantastics go after the pole. I don't know how many times these teams went after the pole, but they did it a lot, and the crowd popped every single time.
Every single time.
Yep, the heels getting heat on them early. The crowd. I thought crowd was hot as hell for this. And Dundee playing dead in the ring was great. There's a lot of great near getting the whip spots. The Fantastics comeback is all full of fire and energy. The cutoffs on the pole have been great. Fulton with this amazing hot tag. He gets cut off, but then there's another awesome hot tag to Rogers. This is all go, 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 all action. Finally, the Fantastics get the whip. And clear house and get the win. A really hot match with a lot of story and a hot crowd. I'd probably give it like 3 3/4 stars. I mean, I really liked this match a lot. I thought it was better than the one that made the Mid-South set, if I'm not mistaken, where it was longer, and it gave us a little bit more story. And I thought these teams were great. And you know, Mantell and Dundee, they didn't tag. They tagged enough, but they weren't like, I wouldn't call them a regular tag team.
No.
But, you know, those Memphis guy style workers, they are great at shtick and being able to form a tag team. I mean, we've seen it with Dundee and Lawler when they tagged together. They didn't tag all the time, but they had instant chemistry. Same here with the Mantell-Dundee team. And I think a lot of it is because of the Memphis psychology, and they did a lot of tag feuds or they do single feuds, and then the single guys would bring partners in. They'd do a lot of tag work. So they were really familiar and had their own type of shtick and stuff, and they were great. And Dundee is just a heat magnet here. It was just a super great match, man. What do you think of it?
I love this. It was 22 minutes long, man. This is not a short match.
With probably about 4 minutes of the Fantaxis going around.
That's true. Four minutes of... They have to actually restart Sharp Dressed Man.
Yeah, a few times.
But it's great because the heels are in the ring, and Sharp Dressed Man is playing, and Dutch starts dancing to their song. I was like, that was badass. And first of all, to your point, that was one of my major takeaways. I was like, Dutch and Buddy are fucking great. This could be one of my favorite tag teams I've ever seen, because Dutch is all business pretty much, except when he's stooging, but otherwise he's like all business generally. And Dundee's a clown, and Dundee clowns around a lot, like he's the one riling up the fans, like pointing out there was some chicks at ringside who wanted to kill him. He's just yelling at him, and he's like pointing at Dutch, you know, going, "Hey Dutch, look at that fat one," or something like that. And they're like, ah, and it's great. They want to kill him. And at ringside, though, protecting them is Officer Badmother. You know, he's there. Yes, Sergeant Badmother is on the job, and that's the name I'm giving him. Someone is waving.
Thanks for explaining that. Like everyone thought that was his real name.
Hey, you never know. It could have been. You know, someone's waving the WWE wrestling album at the Fantastics. I was like, do you think they're going to sign that? Because on the back of the wrestling album is just a picture of Greg Valentine's face for some reason. And you just see that being waved.
I know, that's there was like this clip recently of the guy playing the new Flash in the movies, and they had an Avenger comic book they wanted him to sign. He's explaining, you know why I can't sign this, right? You do understand we're two different companies. And stuff. But yeah,
just sign it for the kid, you cunt. But this might be the best pole match I've ever seen.
I agree.
I was thinking about that during this. I mean, I always love pole match gimmicks. I hate the fact that the whole Vince Russo thing makes people even just, they hear pole match, they immediately shit on it because of the Russo stuff. But I've seen ones that I've enjoyed. I love the world class Star Wars 83, the cage match with Karrion Flair and Ace, they had a tag, a check on the pole or something, a battle royal that I always really liked. But this, oh my God, they went to that pole constantly, and every time they got a pop.
And not only that, they went to it constantly, but it was usually the three of them, with Fulton, Rogers, and Dundee, and all three of them could climb the pole, you know?
But even then, you always had Dutch in there, too, and they were doing all these unique ways of using each other as stairs.
Yeah.
It was awesome, but it didn't look contrived.
No. It didn't look like they set up, like, you know, no, like a triple suplex spot, you know. Or,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it looked doom. Yeah, this looked natural. It looked organic.
But they would do, like, he was bent over, so Dundee at one point pops up the ropes like a luchador from one to the other, bing, bang, boom, and over top of someone's head. They work that until they need a break. And then the break is just towards the end, they go into a normal tag structure.
Yeah.
But one of the fans is hurt, so it's still the heels with an advantage, but they're following the rules this time because they're tagging in and out. As soon as Tommy Rogers gets his breath, he comes in, flies off the top rope, and it's back to full Texas Tornado brawling, and it's awesome. And Dundee, again, he has every little thing he does. He's celebrating, he's pointing at one of the fans when they're down and looking at Dutch, like, hey, look at that, Dutch. He's amazing here. He's amazing. And the Fantastics are awesome because, again, they're, yes, they're the good-looking guys who are going to get herpes from all the fucking kissing that they're doing, or at least get a cold. But in the ring, they don't take any shit, you know? And I always love that. Down to the sheep herders, dude. Yeah, they're the pretty boys. They're the pretty boys wrapped up in barbed wire. Fantastics don't take no shit.
Yeah,
you know? You know, they may wear the vest and the bow tie and shake their ass, but speaking of ass, they gave the women in the crowd what they wanted here. And that's one of the reasons why a pole match was booked, because it gave them the opportunity for both Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton to both climb up that pole so the whole auditorium could see them and have their trunks pulled down and their high knees showed. When every time it happened, all the girls went, ah! It was perfect. I love this so much. I mean, look down, like, how many minutes have gone by already?
Yeah. All action.
Except all the pole climbing shit made sense. It eventually got to a point where I think Tommy Rogers is the one who climbed the pole, or if it wasn't, vice versa, whatever. But he realized, because the heels were double-teaming one of the Fantastics in the corner, and they're back to him. And he has to make the decision, does he rescue his partner, or does he take this opportunity? He takes the opportunity knowing that his partner is a man and can take a beating, because that was the opportunity. And he does, and he gets up there and gets it, flies off with a flying move using the butt of the whip into Dundee's mush, 1, 2, 3, and wins the match for his team. It's like, fucking A, that's booking. That's awesome. Awesome match.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, let's look at the card here real quick. And it's from September 27th, 1985. The opening match is Eddie Gilbert versus Jerry Gray, and that's already been uploaded. Next match was Lord Humongous versus Tony Falk, which we just talked about. Then the next match was the Fantastics versus Bill Dundee and Dutch Mantel that we just talked about. Next match was Jake versus the Barbarian. We just talked about it. The next match is Ted DiBiase versus Chavo Guerrero, which is like a par of wet dream. that hasn't been released yet, so hopefully we'll get a chance to see it. Then we have a Dick Murdoch versus Butch Reed, and all their matches that made the Mid-South set, Mid-South UWF set for Death Valley Driver, all finished high, like in the top. I think two made it, and they both made like the top 5 or top 10. So I'm hoping this one makes it here. The next match is Duggan and versus El Corsario, who is Savio Vega, when that's been uploaded, and then the loser leave town cage match with Hacksaw and Skandar, and that's been uploaded. So there's a good chance we're gonna get those two matches eventually. If everything else on this card has been uploaded, I can't imagine these two matches not being uploaded, especially since Chavo and Ted were both big favorites of Paul Bosch, and Butch Reed was a guy who was prominently drew a lot of money for Paul Bosch along with Dick Murdoch. So I'm pretty confident we'll get both of those. Man, both of them sound pretty hot, huh?
Oh yeah, totally.
All right, man. On that note, why don't we take a break and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site, when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
The PWO-PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back with Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast. And now we're going to go back in time a little bit to February 26th in 1982. And this card is, we got the first two matches of this card and off it, but it's not a bad card. But it has Ken Lucas versus Mike Boyer. We have Tiger Conway Jr. versus Ivan the Terrible. We Ricky Morton, Bob Sweet Ann. We're gonna be talking about. There's Winona Little Heart facing Pepper Torres. We have a Mexican death match between the Grappler and Chavo Guerrero, which could be good. We're gonna talk about Dusty versus Hacksaw. And the main event was a steel cage match with Bruiser Brody and Dick Slater versus the Dynamic Duo, which sounds all forms of awesomeness. But I'm definitely hoping for that steel cage match. But and I really would love to see the Grappler versus Chavo. What about you?
Oh yeah, it's steel cage match though. That sounds right up my alley.
Yeah, for sure. But let's talk about Bob Sweet Ann and Ricky Morton. And this is February 26, 1982. Well, you know, Bob Sweet Ann just recently passed away, and it's come to light the guy was a scumbag. I mean, child molester and
not a good guy.
Not a good guy. Got deported out of the States to Canada. Just all around yucky dude. And I mean, he even looks like a yucky dude. It's amazing that he had a year run as a babyface. But yeah, he was never had a good reputation around wrestling, as in they all thought he was a loner, and then all this other stuff comes out, and man, a real scumbag and stuff.
He's a loner. He drove a van.
Yeah. Good God. Oh, just a horrible human being, it seems like. But you know what? I actually like him as a worker at times, but yeah, he's still a scumbag. Mm-hmm. What'd you make of this match?
It wasn't a bad match, because Ricky Morton is a fucking god. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
Let's focus on that instead of Bob Sweet Ann, who we'll get to his terrible fucking promo. First of all, Paul makes a comparison between young Rick Morton and young Tom Pritchard. That I was like, well, okay, you know, that's great. They were both young at the same time.
Yeah, they end up being... drawing they were became big feud in Smoky Mountain with him and the Heavenly Bodies, and Dr. Tom was originally supposed to be the Stan Lane replacement in the Midnight Express. So I mean, they have a history together too, you know.
Yeah, and but there's a lot of cowboy hats in this crowd. You notice this?
Texas.
Well, yeah, but there was like a lot of like urban cowboy, you know, big white ones with lots of feathers in the front. And I was laughing at the amount of these fucking hats. And then a father walks by hard camera side carrying his little boy, wearing a little boy version of one of these fucking hats. It's like, oh, Jesus. And Paul explains a headlock. This is awesome, because they're going to be booked to go into a 15-minute draw. Ricky Morton's got to work headlocks. By the way, Ricky Morton working a headlock is awesome, because everything he does is awesome. Every facial expression he has is amazing. You know, like calling Sweet Ann a son of a bitch because he went after his arm. Like, he's like, oh, you. It's like we mentioned before, he's never like, oh, I'm the plucky baby face. He's always like, the fuck you. I'm as bad as you are, motherfucker. You know, and Paul's explaining the headlock. And it's awesome at first. So you want to get the bone of your arm right against either the chin, the bone, or right under the ear, because that's how it works. I was like, oh, I love that kind of shit. You know, some people's like, it's a rest hold. I was like, yeah, but when you got Paul Bosch telling you how much it hurts, and that's the reason why he's doing it, that always explains that away. Then he goes back to it, and he gets real sexy with this. He goes, yeah, you got to take that headlock and ram it in and push. Push it in and grind. I'm like, oh, Mr. Bosch. And then they announce a match that I want to see. Brody versus Duggan with Luthez as the referee. That's like the upcoming main event thing the next month or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, ditto. Yeah, they said, and we'll talk about more of that next, because they actually built to it in that next match.
But then Ricky Morton hits, speaking of Memphis working, Ricky Morton hits a fucking top rope fist drop that looks fucking great, and it hit me. I'm like, you know what everyone from Memphis could do? Two things now. Well, punch, but two things we both mentioned. A, immediately be able to work in a tag team.
Yep.
And do a goddamn top rope fist drop and make it look awesome. Lawler did it. Ricky Morton did it. Bobby Eaton is the king. You know, that's a Memphis move.
Yep.
And guys who can do it well, it's one of my favorite moves. Because a fist drop is patently ridiculous. But if you can make it look like I believe it, you're an amazing worker.
Yeah, my favorites were Lawler, and I always loved DiBiase's fist drop too.
DiBiase's was the side fist drop.
Yeah.
I'm talking about from the top rope.
I know what you're talking about, but it's still a fist drop.
Yeah, okay. Just back off. but Ricky Morton is like, Sweet Dan holds his own here just fine, but it's all about watching Ricky Morton basically use him as a base.
Yeah.
And swinging, he's doing luchador type shit in some of this, like swinging. When he swings around from being in the headlock to putting on the headlock by rolling over Sweet Dan's giant fat back, you know, it's like, that was brilliant. Forget about Bob Sweet Dan. Watch this match so you can watch a young Ricky Morton showing, as Paul Bosch said. He's like, he's a youngster with a future. I was like, yep.
Yeah, I enjoyed this, and I enjoyed it enough. I like the cat and mouse stuff early on. I really like Sweden punching Morton's arm, because at first it was like, wow, that's nasty. I mean, that looked like it hurt. And then Morton sells it good, but then he goes on offense, and he's using aerial tactics to keep Sweet Tan off balance. And I'm liking Morton here in his shine. He's using the headlock as a base and working spots around it. Morton busts out a victory roll, or what more people will call it now, a Huracanrana, which, again, like you're saying, total luchador move. And at the time, it's really state-of-the-art for 1982. Finally, Sweet Tan uses his size to cut off Morton, and Sweden's on the arm that he worked on early in the match, so that's okay. Crowd's getting hot for Morton. And especially after all of Sweden's work on top here has been pretty ho-hum, but Morton makes it interesting by his selling, at least, and Morton makes a comeback, and this was solid, but it was kind of clear they were kind of working towards a draw, but I loved all of Morton's near falls down the stretch, and how he almost wins, and made up for it. I give it like 2.5 stars. I mean, I thought it was a good, solid underneath match, but it's just like Morton, though, you can look at it, and you're like, damn, he was so state-of-the-art and so ahead of his time right here in 1982.
You can tell he was a star. You watch the guy, that guy's gonna be a fucking star. And this is without any promo. Just watching this match, you go, that kid's a fucking star in the making. He's so good. And that, the urgency of them trying to get the falls as the countdown was going was really great. That was super entertaining and fun. And again, it was all Ricky Morton.
Yeah, it was. It was all Ricky Morton. Sweden was a solid heel in his role, don't get me wrong. But this was definitely the Ricky Morton show. And
I mean, he wasn't a total tackling dummy.
Yeah.
You know, but he was good enough at what he had to do. But as we've said, I've seen some Bob Sweet Dan matches where I was like, ugh, you know. But you put him in there with good guys, and he can be okay as a base. And you give a young Ricky Morton, a guy who's a passable base, he's going to make this match shine.
Yeah, and that's what he did. And Morton was so great here. And you're like, God, he was great. I mean, yeah, because, I mean, let's admit it. Houston is not, there's not a lot of, now there is with the NWA On Demand footage. But at first, there was not a lot of Ricky Morton in 1982, and now we've seen him. And, I mean, he was just as good in 82, almost as good as he was in 84, you know. And some people might even like him a little bit more in 82 because he's working faster. He doesn't have the selling down as much as he would later on in his career. But what he did here, he was a lot more flashy in a way, you know?
I prefer the fully baked, no pun intended, Ricky Morton, where he's got the crowd in the palm of his hands. Yes, rock and roll, baby.
I'm with you on that. I like that Ricky Morton, too. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But I can see a modern person liking this Ricky Morton more because he's a little flashy and not understanding. And a lot of fans don't understand the aspect of the sell.
The modern fan who doesn't enjoy being entertained by his wrestling. Okay,
exactly.
Fine.
Exactly. He's not gimmicked up enough. But hey, let's move to the main event. And what a main event it was. It's Dusty Rhodes versus Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Oh, man. What you make of this, buddy?
Okay, first of all, it hit me as I'm about to watch this because I read a few of you guys saying, oh, it's bloody. And of course, it says, caution, blood. And I'm going, oh, man, Dusty Rhodes versus heel Hacksaw. It's like, shit, there's something I've never seen. I've never seen a Dusty Duggan match. And I'm like, I don't think so.
I don't think no one's ever existed.
Never thought about it. I never even thought about it. You sit around doing, dude, I'd love to see, man. You know, it never was Dusty versus Duggan. And sure shit, though, I'm glad we got it because this fucking ruled. And Paul Bosch, I love the part of Paul Bosch's gimmick is that he doesn't like Duggan at this point.
Not at all. He hates him.
He hates him, and he loves making fun of how dumb he is on commentary because he says, like, in Buck Robley telling Hacksaw Jim Duggan what to do, Duggan looks like the kind of guy who needs to be told what to do, to be fair. And I was like, that's a great line. Yep. And then he gets in, when Duggan does his foot stomp, he gets in his classic, he's counting like a horse gag, which we've heard before, but it's always good. And this made me laugh because we've had this little narrative about Dusty being, whether or not he's over in Houston. And Paul Bosch makes a very, very big point about how Dusty has now decided that Houston is his home and that this is his base of operations and that he lives here. And that just, all I could think of was what we've been talking about. He's like, Dusty's just not as over as I need him to be here in Houston. What do I need to do? He lives here, folks.
Yep.
He calls Houston his home. Now, can you finally cheer him? He's getting cheered here.
Yeah.
And there's a shot where Dusty is covered in fucking blood. Dusty is covered. This is 1982 after Mag, Napolitan Auto Mag's, pronounce it right, the front page where the guy's just covered in blood. You just see the whites of his eyes sticking out. Dusty's covered in blood. And Duggan's kicking his ass. And Dusty is doing a little bit of no-selling, and it works. And then he just starts fighting back, and it's fighting back Dusty Rhodes covered in blood and kicking ass, and I am fucking marking out, pop out of my seat, like, yeah, motherfucker, because that's probably one of my top 10 list of favorite things in wrestling. Dusty Rhodes covered in blood coming back to kick someone's ass is in that list. And then just it turns into a schmoz. Brody comes in to save Dusty, and that made me like a Dusty Rhodes Bruiser Brody team. Never thought about it before. I want to kind of see it now.
Yeah, I think because you'd have Dusty selling his ass off and bleeding, Brody as a hot tag. I think it'd work.
I just adored this, and because heel Duggan is so much fun to watch, and especially young heel Duggan. We'll get into the promos after we talk about the match because those are fantastic for the most part. And But yeah, this is so much fun. Like, I've read a few people, like PWO or whatever, going, yeah, it was okay. I liked it. It's always fun to see Dusty bleed. And it's like this backhanded compliment. So I was like, you know what? No. Go jump in the lake. This ruled. These guys are beating dog shit out of each other.
Yeah, I like this. I like this. I like Duggan starts off with this huge punch, but it's a complete whiff to start things. But there's no collar and elbow tie off. That's just saying this is going to be a fist are going to be flying. Dusty with his, you know, shtick, the shucking and the jiving. And we see Dusty pull out some nice arm drags. And I thought the crowd was pretty hot here for Dusty. And
they really were, yeah.
Yeah. Duggan looks pissed now, and Duggan takes him to the corner, and Dirty fights him in the corner. I like that. I like Doug. I'm always a mark for Duggan does his jumping elbow. And is it an easy move to do? Yeah, but it just looks really awesome for when he does it. And then Duggan takes him outside, and he beats on Dusty and busts him open. And, I mean, it's his face and his chest. I mean, it's all over the place. And Duggan does wrestling 101, and he's after the cut. He's punching it, throwing elbows, clotheslining it, dropping a knee on it. He's going after the fucking cut. Dusty starts a comeback. I like these. I like how they were sprinkled in, but he's cut off. And then we get a little bit back and forth where we think Dust is going to make a comeback, but no, Duggan still cuts him off. Duggan mounts Dusty and goes after the cut with like a ground and pound, like in UFC. Really, really nasty and pretty much I want to say really ahead of its time, because you don't really see the ground and pound until UFC becomes famous. And here we see Duggan doing it in 82. Really nice. Finally, Dusty powers up and he makes the comeback. Then Buck Robley gets involved and it's a DQ. Brody and Duggan pair off, and what they tease us with is pretty awesome, the brawl on the floor. And you're like, okay, I need this. I want to see this match. Slater and Sweet Tan are out, and I got to say, Sweden's pile driver on Slater was absolutely nasty. And you believe that this pile driver, the jumping pile driver, just totally dismantled.
Because it's the way he applies it, Pete.
Yes, this is true, Paul.
It's the way he applies it. It's not the move. It's the way he applies it. Paul keeps going on and on about the way he applies it. He said it in the Morton match, and I kept wondering, like, what's he fucking talking about? And then when we get into the promo,
yeah,
he explains what he means. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah, and I thought this post-match was super heated, and it set up a lot of different angles here. So for me, I'm a big fan of I've used the term umbrella storytelling, where it just, you use the umbrella and it touches four or five different people, so it encompasses them, and this is great, man. And we set up a Brody Duggan feud out of this. We set up an angle in the dynamic duo versus Brody and Slater later. We set up Sweet Ann and Slater's feud some more, added more heat to it. So a lot of interesting happening just off this one angle. And overall, this was a real fun, spirited brawl, about 3.25 stars. I really liked it. And I loved all the angles, how it all encompasses. Yeah. Now, man, Johnny, talk about these fucking promos.
Okay. Well, first of all,
freaking tremendous.
I know. First of all, that umbrella storytelling thing—that's something Dusty loved too.
Yep. The horseman all of them.
Everything, and believe me, that's one of the reasons when I discovered Crockett. Well, you know, after only watching WWF, you know, and finally getting Crockett, I was like, oh, these storylines are all like interconnected. And I was at the time really into comic books, and continuity was a big thing. And I was like, oh, this is all interconnected. Whereas it was not interconnected in WWF. It was all separate.
And even if you look at today, it's like they don't. The only time they started like an umbrella storytelling a lot is when they have like Elimination Chambers or the Royal Rumble.
And I understand both ways of presenting it, you know, completely. But anyway. Okay, these promos. So here's Paul Bosch. Paul Bosch is pissed. These promos might as well be called Paul Bosch, everyone has to go see the principal, basically, is what this is. And Paul Bosch is the principal because Duggan comes out and Paul Bosch is not happy with Duggan. And Duggan's not disrespecting Paul Bosch, but he's just like, look, let me tell you. So he's like, my Bruiser Brody gets his hands on you, blah, blah, blah. So let me tell you, Bruiser Brody, I've had enough of you. And we're going to get together finally and we'll see who really is the real deal. Tough guy. And he's awesome. You know, he's not goofy at all. He's awesome. He's still a bad guy. And Paul Bosch is just looking at him like, you piece of shit. And then as he leaves away, he goes, he's a man of few words, but he uses them often. I am stealing that. I'm going to hope I can use it tonight. And here comes Bob Sweetan. And Paul Bosch goes, well, you ought to be proud. And Sweetan then proceeds to stink.
Really? I disagree with you. I liked it because it was so different than how Duggins was as fired up. I thought Sweetan was more low. I thought it was more like... I thought it was very Bachwinkle-esque, to tell you.
He even said, he goes, you will have the fear of Sweetan.
I liked it, man. I liked it a lot. So we're going to disagree on this one. I thought Sweetan was effective in his promo. I don't want to say it was like a 10 promo, but I thought he was real effective, and I thought it was a real good change of pace following Duggan's fired up promo. And different.
Marble mouth.
And I thought Sweetan's promo was really slimy and different than Duggan's.
Well, slimy is the next guy because it's fucking Buck Rovely. And Buck Rovely comes out, and Paul Bosch is now, he's like, you. It's like the principal going, you're the one that started this whole bullshit. And he's like, you started all this. You grabbed Dusty Rhodes. And he is respectful almost, like, because he's almost brown-nosing. He's like, oh, no, not me, Mr. Bosch. It wasn't me, Mr. Bosch. No, Mr. Bosch, it wasn't me. And then he turns around to yell about whatever. And then he goes... And the crowd's booing him, and he goes, how about a little respect? And Paul Bosch goes, that's exactly what you're going to get, little respect. And I'm like, oh, Paul Bosch is on fire. He is dropping fucking fire in this interview segment because he's so angry. And, oh, he's wonderful. And then we get Bruiser Brody, and now Paul's happy. Because it's Brody.
A baby face, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, and his baby face. Yeah,
his walking tall baby face.
And he says, it's Bruiser Brody. He's like, Hacksaw Jim Duggan was out here. Boy, Duggan takes a dim view of you. He's like, I don't care, Mr. Bud. Paul. He calls him Paul.
Yeah.
Not like, because he can't. But Brody delivers a great promo that ends with, he goes, I'm going to do this, do that. He goes, and I'm the kind of guy who can back up his big mouth. And Bosch loves the line. He goes, that's true. That's a man. He's got a big mouth, but he can back it up. And I was like, hallelujah. This was Paul Bosch at his best as being the angry promoter / announcer. You know, I love it when that happens. Like, I love Bruno yelling at Randy Savage. And
that was a great one.
Yeah, when Vince would get all like, in guy's face. You know, when David Crockett did it, I hated it because he was like whining. I couldn't wait for Nikita to fucking take his head off. But when it's Paul Bosch, it's great because, you know, no one's going to take a fucking poke at him. You know, yeah, Buck Rowley's like, oh, no, it wasn't me, Mr. Bosch. Like, he's fucking Peter Lorre. This was wonderful. Anyone who complains about the fact that Bruce uploads all the trimmings like this, you know, dude, stop. Because this is what...
Part of Houston. It's part
it
of
makes it.
It
so much fun. It makes it more than just, this match was a 5-star match.
It makes it personal.
It does. It makes it personal. It draws you in and it gives you an idea of what this promotion was and what Paul Bosch was. And like I said, we talked about like, you know, think on the last Titan show, we talked about like, oh, what were revelations? I think with this one, like my revelation was like, is Paul Bosch. Like, I think he's just tremendous. He's tremendous.
Matt D was saying this was Paul Bosch as Lance Russell.
Yeah, but it was as if Lance Russell also owned the show.
Right.
You know?
Now, I will say one thing here. I was not as big a fan of the Brody promo as you were. First, he's talking about, which they didn't really
I liked the last line. I liked
yeah,
the
last line was good. But he was talking about how, yeah, I was supposed to face him once and I no-showed.
That was weird.
That was really weird. I guess that's something that happened and it's a big deal.
Basically, Brody just, like, shot on somebody. He's like, yeah, we were supposed to meet, you know, but anyone who says I ran away from him, you don't know. I did choose not to face him, but that's another thing in the past. And I'm going,
yeah, I think this was a shoot he was shooting on Joe Blanchard, who I'm pretty sure was the booker of South. He owned Southwest Championship Wrestling, so I'm sure there was a payoff dispute or something.
Gotcha. I mean, that's exactly what it sounded like. I'm like, why would Bruiser Brody on a live promo say, yeah, I chose not to fight Dick Slater, or I chose not to fight whoever. But that's another reason you don't need to know about that, but I'm going to do it this time.
And then I liked how he, it was so weird how he's like threatening to stalk Duggan. You know, he's like, almost like it was very heelish in a way, what Brody was going to do.
I'm going to get there early, 7 o'clock. Like, that's early? Isn't the show starting at 7:30?
All right. You know, we get double standards for the main eventers. We don't have to get here before the show starts.
You know, we do see that. We watched, you know, Raw or Nitro back in the day, and main eventers were showing up in limousines as the show was happening.
Exactly. I guess
it's the thing.
I thought Brody was a little off all over the place at first, and but then he honed it in. Overall, I liked all the promos in a way. I thought Brody's was the worst out of the group of them. But obviously you thought Sweet Ends were, which is fine. Overall, though, I just loved it. I thought this was like the icing on the cake. And, you know, I thought this was another great upload from NWA On Demand. What about you, Johnny?
Oh, yeah, this was a blast. I adored Paul Bosch so much in this. The match before it was once again, it was one of those weeks I was going, you know, they really over delivered, And I know I sound like a shill, the last week there was a huge dump of stuff, and I was like, I can see it slowing down. Bruce was in Japan, some shit, but nope, right in the nick of time for this show. Yeah. I like to think that, Pete. He's like, those guys can't have a podcast with no material, I've got to give them material.
Yep. Yeah, man, thanks a lot. Remember, everyone, you download the Tubio app. You want to watch it on your Roku, so you don't have to complain about that. I think I've heard a lot of people have used it, and it's working for them. So there we go. Johnny, you have anything you want to plug? I know we just dropped our last Titans, and that was a really great show. If you guys haven't heard it, definitely check it out. It's worth your time, I believe. If you're a fan of the Titans, if you're not, or if you've never listened to us, I mean, it's the last show, so you can get hooked on the last show and then binge listen to the rest of them. Anything you want to plug, Johnny?
Yeah, Pete with the most. That was enthusiastic. Jesus Christ! But no, that was it too. Seriously, Last Titans is out there. Over at PWO, it's already being swallowed in that fucking thread full of other shit. It's good that we went out when we did, brother. But it was a super fun show. If you were a fan of the show, and Pete's, to his point, these Titan shows are timeless because we're talking about old shit. You know, we don't do any modern references, pretty much. So check it out, the last show, and go back, because they're all archived and they're a lot of fun, and this last show was a ton of fun, and that's the only thing I could possibly plug this week.
Yeah, I would say it's special.
Mm-hmm.
And follow me at Twitter at TitansOWrestling. Have a great week, guys. Laters.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden. King of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night.